If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
And welcome back to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. We continue our look at theater in the arts in Chicago. Now, this show is not about to open. In fact, it's already played in Chicago, and it's even played in New York. So to me, it's a fascinating story because it's about local folks do good. And I want you to meet the local folks who are part of making this happen, not only in Chicago, but who took it to New York. And it's an incredible project. It's called Malapert Love, and it was written by Saya Berlatsky. Saya, first of all, congratulations on this. We're going to talk about what this is. This premiered when you were 21. I'm sorry for the ages, but you started writing this thing at the age of 15?
Yeah. So I started writing this play in high school when I was first getting interested in Shakespeare and theater and starting to experiment with style and form, and really also grappling with queer identity growing up in the city. So I wrote it, and there was a student reading in my senior year of high school, and then Kathy Scambiatera at the Artistic Home, which is the theater company that we're ensemble members at. She was my teacher at Shy Arts, and she saw this reading and was really interested in it. And so then from there, we went into development readings and a production in Chicago in 2022. And finally, this off-Broadway premiere in New York. It's been pretty incredible.
Amazing. Kathy, a great name, by the way. Our viewers saw her when she was on this show for Prayer for the French Republic. An amazing, amazing actor. And of course, to do what you needed to do, Saya, you got to have a director. So you found not only a director, but an actor. Actually, it's somebody who I first met as an actor. Maybe that came first, maybe not. But then we get into the director role in Julian Hester. You are such a talent, Julian. It is just amazing. Do you call yourself, I'm an actor who's also a director, or are you a director who also acts?
Oh, gosh. I have to be an actor that's also a director, but I've been really fortunate to kind of get a couple of hats to try on these days in terms of producing, directing, and acting, and kind of generating theater. And so I'm lucky to be an artist. You know, I'm happy to be able to play that kind of shell game, dodging things around, you know.
Yeah, and I first saw you when you were performing with Windy City Playhouse in an amazing show, and of course now all of Dick Wolf's shows revolve around you.
Yeah.
as they air on NBC. So Saya, first of all, Malapert Love. I now have viewers going, I'm sorry, what love? It is actually a word, Malapert, but it's like a really archaic word. And I had to kind of, I'm going to be honest, I looked it up, and it means like disrespectful. Give us the genesis of this.
Yeah, so Malapert Love, Malapert is a Middle English word that by the time Shakespeare was using it was already sort of archaic and kind of a, you know, fancy old-timey word.
Archaic in his time.
Yes, already it was sort of he's being fancy and whatever. I think I first came across this word reading Twelfth Night. There's a line in Twelfth Night when Toby Belch is challenging Cesario to the duel, and he says, "I must have an ounce or two of this Malapert blood from thee." And I was so taken with that line. And so the play is really about the idea of falling in love with the wrong person, because Malapert means impudent, disrespectful, eschewing social manners and rank, mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. So the idea is really about servants falling in love with their masters, counts falling in love with countesses who don't like them back.
You use Shakespearean devices. You've got, yes, the mistaken identities, and right. So clearly, you know, Shakespeare very well, because to use the devices and to sort of play with Shakespeare's work, you got to know what you're doing.
Yes, I like to think so. I've been reading Shakespeare since my freshman year of high school, since eighth grade, really. And I love it, and I read it over and over again, and I have opinions about it. And I think that's all you really need to write something. You need opinions.
So, Julian, when I was 15, I was still trying to understand Mr. Popper's Penguins and Dr. Doolittle. But I'm sort of curious, what brought you? Tell me how you and Saya met. What did the project bring you to Saya?
We're now both ensemble members at Artistic Home Theater, and this play is kind of what brought Saya on board our company. I'm now a 10-year long ensemble member there, which feels like it's a decade, and so it's been a big part of my life now.
So math was your thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Math was my thing. To answer your question, though, comedic math is something that I really to read on the page, let alone write well on the page, and to have it legibly written. And Saya's just such a brilliant wordsmith with that stuff, and her love for Shakespearean tropes and the long-held love that we all have for Shakespeare, and why those classical texts have stood the test of time that they have done. And I also saw a little bit of a misanthropic kind of ain't I a stinker kind of ingredients in the writing of it. And so I was really taken by that and pitched myself to Kathy, our artistic director. And I kind of pitched it to her as an escalation kind of narrative, in the same way that we think of Western canon musicals in that way, of where when it's not enough to speak, people start singing. And when it's not enough to sing, you start dancing. And if it's a Fred Astaire movie, they start flying, you know? And so in this show, it occurred to me that when people, it's not enough to speak this beautiful prose and sometimes verse language to people to try and convince them of their wrongheaded love, that they start climbing on each other or the set. And when it's not enough to climb, they start fighting. And so the whole show, I was going, I wonder how this is going to culminate. And when I'm reading through it the first time, it culminates in a 6-person sword fight for this woman that everyone's convinced that they're in love with. And it's just this, it turns the audience from hearing the play, like the Brits say, into spectators, seeing this awesome spectacle that in this most recent production we got to do was exploding pillows with colorful feathers flying all over the place. It was pretty remarkable to get to be a part of.
Yeah, you also had an amazing, I mean, Grant Carriker, some of the folks who got cast in this thing were just amazing. Grant just had an amazing term in Angels in America here with Victus. And so the fine casting job, we'll get to that. But Saya, let me come back to you, because obviously it's a challenge. Look, there's people who like you, love Shakespeare. They're all about Shakespeare. And then there's a few people who say, so you had to blend this sort of, 15th century sort of stories and mores and all the things that go with that, with 21st century interests and values. Now, Shakespeare allows you to do that because in many ways, I mean, he's talking about love. He's talking about identity. I mean, that's a big part of him. But is that what you, did you take the past and move it to the future? How did you meld them?
So I think that one of the main things that I was excited, I was trying to do with this play was, sort of prove, excavate these tropes and these classical structures, which I was so interested in and had so much fun with, and sort of make the next step to them, essentially. I prove that these ideas and these tropes and these dramatic situations still have value, and still there is still something that we can get out of them in the modern world. It's sort of a cliche, but I really do think that these things are universal, and it's less for me, it's Shakespeare is difficult, and you have to have a certain amount of training. You have to have a certain amount of reading under your belt to really fully appreciate it. But that doesn't mean that, those tropes are dead and in the past and we can never touch them again. You know, I think that they are perennial, and I think that reaching back into the past and finding things that continue to resonate, it's how theater evolves. It's how we make new work. We're always, building on things. This play is just a little bit more explicit about it.
And Julian, as the director, two questions. Number one, did you say, Saya, here's how we need to do this? How did you all get along in doing it? But secondly, did you sort of say, all right, I know we got Shakespeare stuff here, but I've got this 21st century audience to deal with, so I need to do with that. Tell me about the director's impact in that.
It's definitely something to contend with, right? Is to understand that, now we've done this play twice. We've done it for a 2022 Chicago audience and then a 2025 New York audience. And There always needs to be a way into, you know, if you're doing Romeo and Juliet, are you going to make it take place in Italy, or are you going to bring it over to the States and just kind of make, you know, make Verona a corporation or something, you know? so there's always some version of that. Luckily, with Saya's text, it's kind of got that perfect balance of ambiguity in terms of placing it in a European, you know, medieval area. And country in this sort of unnamed location. And so what we could really do is treat the whole thing in the way that the Globe as a theater is, where it's a pretty bare stage when you look at it. There's columns, there's a bridge, and otherwise they treat it like a playground for the actors. And so I really kept coming back to that. And it occurred to me in working on it this second time around, the actors kept coming to me going, you know, I know last time we did this line in this way, but I'm kind of reading it. I remember Emily Rose Dano, an incredible actor who played Esperanza in the show, and she was nominated for a Jeff Award here in Chicago for supporting performer for her performance in this. And she came to it with that kind of, you know, sense of that weight on herself that's, you know, self-described for her. But she wanted to approach this one big speech of hers in a different way. And I was going, well, yeah, I think we should, because we're all 3 years older and hopefully wiser for our life that we've lived. But so I never really ran into friction with Saya. We always tend to see eye to eye, and we have different superpowers that sort of complement one another. I tend to go for the physical comedy of the thing. Saya toward the wordsmithing and the logic of those things tend to meld well together. And so, you know, we tended to really see eye to eye. There were times when there would be little points in the scenes that I would go, I don't know if we need this anymore. And she would go, well, if you lose that, then we don't really have that character beat, you know, but other than that, we would be nice, healthy checks to each other's power. Yeah. But not so much, bristling at each other's ideas.
So it sounds like, Saya, you were saying, listen here, director.
That's right.
something like that, but, yeah.
Before we lose time, Saya, this, and of course, I think I didn't mention, but this won a Jeff for new work, as best new work here in Chicago. A very quick reaction to what it's like to get the calls. You're going to New York. And then secondly, I need to ask you what you're working on now, because with this success, and now you're so much more seasoned, what are you working on now? What's the next big project we're going to see from you?
Yeah, I mean, having all of this come together in the course of like maybe 3 months, and having waited like 3 years to like get the contract and everything and like get everything in place. And then it's like, okay, we're doing it. We're going, it's happening. It was pretty surreal. And I like didn't fully process it until maybe, you know, 2 weeks into the run or whatever. But it was an incredible experience, and it was like glamorous and exciting and stressful and difficult. But it was fabulous. And I feel like I learned so much in like such a short amount of time. So for what I'm working on now, in the fall, we're hoping to, in the same way that this show is a send up, a reworking, an examination of Shakespearean tropes, I have a play called Galahad Manor, which is similarly sort of my take on Agatha Christie, on murder mystery, and a little bit on like comedies of manners like Oscar Wilde. And so hopefully that'll be going up at Artisticum sometime in the near future.
And would you ever allow Julian to direct anything again?
No, I'll think about it. yes, definitely. Julian is my top pick for anything. We have a very good shorthand now, I think.
Let him star in it, direct, do the whole thing. It'd be fabulous.
Do the whole thing, yeah.
Well, congratulations to both of you, but really to you, Saya, on creating this work of Malapert Love. I mean, just the thought that you were 15, putting it out at 21 is stunning to me. I can't imagine what comes from you after this. It's just going to be, I think you're just somebody we need to watch as time
well,
goes
you.
On. And I know both Julian and I will be watching you as time goes on. And Julian, I'm always looking to see what you're up to next as well, because you are, well, I'm kidding you, but you're one of my favorite people. And I just love the work you do. I hope to see you both again soon, because you both earned this lovely behind the curtain coffee mug that you get to have. We're going to get that to you. For our viewers who are saying, I want one, go to WGNTV.com/store, and you too can have a behind the curtain mug without even the torture of appearing on the show. For now, that will take us to the end of the show for today. Congratulations to both of you, and thanks for being with me. And we'll see all of you next week right here on Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain. Have a good week, everybody.